Okay, good morning. This is San Luis Obispo County Planning Commission on Zoom. It's 9 o'clock on 7/23/20. I'll call the meeting to order. And thank you. And okay. Thank you, Danielle. Could you call the roll, please?
Commissioner Moultari?
Here.
Commissioner Campbell?
Here.
Commissioner Don Ortiz-Legg?
Good morning, here.
And Chair Brown?
Here.
Thank you.
Thank you. And we'll do flag salute, please. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic which it stands,
one nation,
under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Okay, to start the meeting off, as I usually do, I have a, a quick piece of Zoom instruction. We are on Zoom, as we have been for the last few months. Planning commissioners, planning staff, and members of the public wishing to provide live public comment are participating in this meeting using Zoom. Alternative methods for public participation can be found attached to the agenda, as well as a link to a Zoom user's guide for public participation. The public may watch or listen to the meeting live online at sanluiscounty.ca.gov or, excuse me, on TV Live Channel 121. If you are a member of the public wishing to provide live public comment and have joined us by website or smartphone application, when I call you for public comment on a specific item, please do so by using the raise hand feature at the bottom of your Zoom screen. Or if you're joining us by phone, please press star 9 to raise your hand. When it's your turn to speak, the clerk will unmute your connection, announce your name or the last three digits of your phone number if you're calling in, and let you know that you are live and and you can make your comments. You'll be timed for 3 minutes. If you're streaming the meeting through Channel 21 or a county website and wish to provide live public comment through Zoom, please log in or call in early, as there is an approximately 60-second delay between meetings and the live stream. Please remember to turn down your broadcast volume when speaking during public comment to reduce the interference and feedback noises. Okay. This is the time for anybody in the audience via Zoom or phone that would like to bring up an item in front of the Planning Commission that is not on the agenda.
Thank you, Chair Brown. We don't have pre-recorded messages for public comment, but for members of the public wishing to speak during public comment, please use the raise hand feature at the bottom of your screen, or if you're joining via telephone, please press star 9 at this time. You will receive a message from Zoom indicating that the host would like to unmute your connection when we call you for public comment. And we do have at this time two requests to speak. We will begin with Lindy Dowd. Ms. Dowd, we will now unmute your connection and you have 3 minutes.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yes.
Hear you.
Okay, and my husband will be speaking directly after I do. My name is Lindy Dowd. I'm a Los Osos resident, and I'm concerned about some of the proposed changes to the Los Osos Growth Management Ordinance. The proposed Growth Management Ordinance represents major changes in the original community plan that could result in significant undisclosed and unaddressed adverse impacts. These changes would clearly trigger a new or revised EIR under CEQA for the Los Osos Community Plan. A quick comparison of the most recent draft versus the original community plan makes the degree of change abundantly clear. By exempting affordable housing, accessory dwelling units, and farm worker housing from growth rate provisions, the new community plan language and proposed growth management ordinance significantly modify the criteria for determining how and when new development is approved and could further threaten our only water supply. The new language in the amendments to Title 26 of the Los Osos Community Plan, Section 2, Residential Development, reads, "The Growth Management Ordinance, Title 26 of the County Code, shall be amended to establish an annual growth rate for new residential units in the Los Osos urban area consistent with the available sustainable water supply. Residential units exempt from Title 26 are exempt from this standard," and then it lists affordable housing and accessory dwelling units as being exempt from this with the available sustainable water supply. "New affordable housing may not be a significant percentage of new housing in most unincorporated communities of the county. However, the final EIR of the Los Osos Community Plan states that Los Osos could accommodate, quote, 60% of all very low and low-income housing potential in unincorporated areas. It further adds that Los Osos could nearly provide all remaining needed affordable housing countywide, or 404 of the total of 681 units. The whole county is suffering from water shortages, and you'll need water for all the affordable housing the county has been mandated to build. But that housing should be spread throughout the county and not burden one water-stressed community with its numbers. I would like you to consider removing these exemptions. If the county would like to make affordable housing a priority, it can easily do that without making unnecessary exemptions that could further degrade our imperiled water basin."
Okay. I believe she mentioned that she has somebody else that would be speaking during public comment. Are they available to speak now?
Yes.
Oh, there we go. Okay, great. Sir, you have 3 minutes. And thank please you. State your name for the record.
This is Patrick McGibney. I will be speaking as a resident also of Los Osos. I'd like to just reiterate a few of the comments that Ms. Dowd just made and highlight a few things that she said. There's a little confusion from our last meeting that we had on July 9th when we were dealing with the Los Osos Community Plan. In one area, Ms. Brown stated that she was not aware of where the 60% of the building for Los Osos that was required for low-income housing would come from, and that is in the FEIR. So if you do check the FEIR, you will find all that information in there. Ms. Dowd was talking about the new growth management ordinance of Title 26, where it is saying that residential units exempt from Title 26 are exempt from the standard, and the standard is consistent with available sustainable water supply. Now, Ms. Kylie Hensley last time said that all building was going to be required to do 2-to-1 offsets, but according to Title 26, that is not the situation because it states in there that they are exempt from those standards. So we'd like to have that clarified in our next meeting in August 13th when the Los Osos Community Plan comes back up for review and consideration. I would also like to just state that I agree with Ms. Dowd that we would like to have the exemptions removed. All building that is done in Los Osos should be built in accordance with a sustainable water supply, which in condition 5 of the CDP by the Coastal Commission, they say it needs conclusive evidence that the basin is sustainable. So we'd like you to go on that basis also. That's all my comment. I thank you very much.
Thank you. The next speaker is caller ending with the last three numbers of 873. Your line has been unmuted and you have 3 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners. My name is Jeff Edwards. And as a longtime Los Osos resident and professional land planner, I wanted to visit with your commission this morning.
again in connection with the Los Osos Community Plan. I'm extremely concerned about the great number of outstanding and yet to be discussed issues, questions, and policies. I personally have a list of 20-plus items that I'll be sending over to staff and your commission very soon. The plan before you is 25 years in the making, including the predecessor Stero Area Plan update in 2003-2004. Back then, as I recall, the Planning Commission held 3 to 4 hearings and spent many, many hours on the area plan update. And as you know, your commission has just spent one meeting and a little bit over 2 hours on the matter. The Los Osos Community Plan clearly is not ready for approval in 3 weeks, August 13th. I think the Planning Commission would benefit greatly from a better background information to set the framework for further consideration. This kind of background information includes additional discussion about water, sewer capacity, jobs, housing balance, and frankly, I think the discussion needs to be more structured and broken down into component parts. And I hope your commission consideration goes well into September and October, because that's what this plan needs, in my opinion. There's the post-COVID world that we're looking at is in no way been addressed in the plan currently, and we need a full discussion simply on that aspect. And as your commission is aware, at the last meeting, staff was clearly at a disadvantage in responding and interacting with the public, responding to Planning Commission questions and so forth, since the staff report was basically due on July 10th, the next day. So there was almost no time to really dig into some of the details. So this is a plan that will guide development and progress in Los Osos for the next 20 to 25 years. Please, let's spend the necessary time to fully understand the complexities. This is a more complex plan than the Estero Area Plan back in 2003 and 4. Let's get it right. Let's spend the time. I appreciate your attention this morning, and I am available for any questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you. That concludes the request to speak during public comment, Chair.
Thank you. That will close this session to public comment. I'd like to ask staff to comment on future Planning Commission dates, as well as board actions that might affect Planning Commission and recent decisions at the Planning Commission.
Good morning, Chair Brown and Commissioners. This is Alexandria Fowler. Before I start the updates, I would just like to make a brief statement regarding the public testimony that was just received regarding the Los Osos Community Plan.
Right.
As one of your speakers mentioned, the plan is coming back to your commission for consideration, for continued consideration on the 13th of August. Right now, none of the staff that are involved in that particular project or presented to you on the 9th are on this call or this meeting today. But I will make sure that all of the comments and the feedback that we received from the public today is relayed to them, and that they address that when they meet with you on the 13th.
And you could continue that again if need be.
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you.
Okay. So for today's staff update, regarding the Board of Supervisors, there's no recent reportable actions by the Board of Supervisors related to land use planning. Regarding appeals of Planning Commission actions, there are still 3 pending appeals for Board of Supervisors consideration. The first is the appeal of the Branch DCD Membership Conditional Use Permit for Indoor Cannabis Cultivation and Dispensary, which was denied by your commission on October 24th, 2019, and that item is scheduled for board consideration in September 2020. The second is the appeal of the California Production Services Penman Springs Conditional Use Permit for Outdoor Cultivation, which was also denied by your commission on March 12, 2020. And that item is now tentatively scheduled for board consideration in the fall or the winter of 2020. And the last one is the appeal of the Helios Day Spring North River Road conditional use permit for indoor and outdoor cannabis cultivation, which was approved by your commission on September 26, 2019, and is also tentatively scheduled for board consideration in either the fall or winter of this year. For your next two planning commission meetings, the following items are scheduled. For your August 13th meeting, there will be a conditional use permit for the multi-phase development of cannabis activities, including outdoor and indoor cannabis cultivation, processing, manufacturing activities, and non-storefront dispensary, as well as the consideration of a parking modification on a 56.5-acre parcel located at 3919 Hoisna Road, approximately 5 miles northeast of the city of Arroyo Grande. And the other item that is scheduled for that date is the continuation from your July 9th meeting of the associated ordinance amendments and the coastal framework for Planning Table O for the Estero Plan amendment of the Los Osos urban area, commonly referred to as the Los Osos Community Plan. For your August 27th meeting, the following items are scheduled: a minor use permit for cannabis activities, including outdoor cultivation, processing, and consideration of setback screening and fencing modifications on a 10-acre parcel located at 6135 Wasna Townsite Road, approximately 10 miles southeast of the city of Arroyo Grande. And then the last item that's scheduled for your meeting on the 27th of August is a conditional use permit for the multi-phase development of cannabis activities, including indoor and outdoor cultivation, processing, manufacturing, transport, and consideration of a fencing and parking modification on a 59-acre parcel located at 880 Park Hill Road, approximately 15 miles southeast of the community of Santa Margarita. This concludes staff's updates for today.
Thank you, staff. Okay, that brings us to our hearings. item 3, clerk, could you announce that? People's self-help housing.
Thank you, Chair Brown. Hearing item number 3 is a hearing to consider a request by People's Self-Help Housing, Rolling Hills, Phase 3, for a conditional use permit to allow for the construction of a two-story multifamily 28-unit apartment complex consisting of two structures ranging in size from 5,439 to 6,252 square feet each. County file number DRC 2019-00260, Supervisorial District 1, Project Manager Holly Phipps. And Ms. Phipps, your presentation is on the screen. Please proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the Planning Commission. Holly Phipps, Project Manager. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Yes.
Before us today is a request by People's Self-Help Housing to allow the construction of a two-story multifamily 28-unit apartment complex to include two units totaling approximately 30,000 square feet. The project includes the construction of a learning center that will have a kitchen, computer lab, and restrooms. The project also includes the construction of a maintenance building, and the project will result in a disturbance of approximately 2 acres on the 3-acre parcel. The proposed project is located in Templeton at 246 Bennett Way, approximately 260 feet west of Highway 101 and Los Tablos Road intersection. The proposed project is located in the office professional land use category. And this slide is a close-up look at the project site. There is an existing drainage A that comes down from Los Tablos Road and the Veterinarian Center here. The proposed project site will be located in upper north section of the property. A span bridge will be constructed over to Bennett Way across drainage A, and the project will not result in any removal of the riparian habitat or drainage B to the south here. Here we have a look at the site plan. Your staff in your packet has plans from the original plans that were submitted. The plans have slightly altered just a bit to reorientate building 200 and 300. So just the footprint of the building has changed, and site disturbance is still the same. No increase in site disturbance. The Learning Center elevation. The Learning Center will have access to other pedestrians, residents of Rolling Hills 2 and 3. Access will be made through pedestrian pathways that will connect all three properties of People Self-Help, Rolling Hills 2 and 1. Other amenities on site include community garden, barbecues, play area, and a basketball area. Here we have the elevation showing building 200. North and south elevation up top. East and west elevation below. Building 3 elevations from the north and south at top. And then from the east and west as we go to the lower part of the screen. Here we have a look at the landscape plan. And here you can see where we have the basketball court, the learning center, building 200 unit complex, building 300, the maintenance building, and here's the learning center over here. On July 8th, staff did receive comments and recommendations from California Department of Fish and Wildlife. Staff has forwarded those comments along with a memo from staff, a memo from the biologist, and revised Exhibit B. In this letter, California Department of Fish and Wildlife recommended that a biologist determine if there was suitable habitat present for 5 species, which were the least-billed vireo, which is a bird, foothill yellow-legged frog, California red-legged frog, western pond turtle, and American badger. A biologist in the spring of 2019 conducted a habitat evaluation for each of these species and concluded that the site does not contain suitable habitat. As far as the least-billed vireo, the site does fall within the migratory path of this bird. The biologist recommended that the project schedule construction to avoid the nesting bird season or conduct pre-construction nesting bird surveys. This has already been incorporated into mitigation measures BR1 and condition number 21. Staff did revise condition 21 to include the name least-billed vireo. Mitigations are consistent with California Department of Fish and Wildlife recommendation. No additional mitigation is required. And here you can see where I've added that into condition number 21 that you have in your packet. With that, staff is recommending adoption of the mitigated negative declaration in accordance with CEQA and requesting approval of the conditional use permit based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and the conditions listed in Exhibit B. Here with us today is John Fowler, CEO, and Stephen Roscoe, agent from People Self-Help Housing, and they will both provide a short presentation and are here and available to help answer questions. David Graham from Public Works and planning staff is also available to help answer your questions. That concludes my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, staff. Mr. Fowler, if you have some comments, or Stephen Orozco, you have been promoted to a panelist, so you could unmute your connection and speak at this time.
Great. Thank you very much. This is John Fowler, People Self-Help Housing President and CEO. And good morning, commissioners, and thank you for listening to this and for your approvals for this morning, obviously. So I am going to start the presentation off a little bit with just a little bit about who we are, and then Stephen is going to jump in and actually get into any details of the project itself. But I just, for those commissioners who don't know us, we've been around, and let me share my screen here a little bit. I got a couple slides. And let's do optimize. Share. Is that? Okay, so can... Are you able to see my screen?
No.
Okay.
Sorry, John.
Pardon?
No.
All right. Let's try it again.
Mr. Fowler and staff is prepared to also share our screens with your PowerPoint presentation if you'd like.
Yeah, that might be easier. I'm struggling here a little bit doing this, so if you wouldn't mind. There you go. And that's actually starting the presentation with that Stephen has. So let me just talk about mine verbally here and go mine. So I just wanted to start the presentation off and talk a little bit about people's self-help housing for just some background on us before you get into the project itself. So we've obviously been around for 50 years. We've done 54 of these projects, I think, thus far, 25 of those in this county alone. So, and this is the third phase, obviously, of Rolling Hills. So we just want to let you know that we are your largest nonprofit here on the Central Coast and been here for 50 years doing, and so you know us, hopefully, and you've seen our projects and know that we, you know, those sites not only stay looking very nice, but also have the amenities. And the nice thing about this is that we'll be able to, in doing this third phase of Rolling Hills, we'll be able to add a learning center and more amenities and services to these existing first two phases. So we're excited about this project. Also looking at this is one of several projects, what with the governor's new, you know, sort of emphasis to get more housing and more affordable housing, we're really stepping up our game as well. And so you'll be seeing many projects coming forth. We have one in Atascadero and Grover Beach, Cambria, Pismo Beach, several in San Luis Obispo. So so you'll be seeing many of these projects come through. So hopefully the commissioners are familiar with us and our background and sort of can answer some of those questions and realize that we are excited to be your largest nonprofit housing developer here and looking to bring in this project, the third phase, to fruition as well. So with that, I am going to turn it over to Stephen and let him talk a little bit about the project itself. Stephen, are you there?
Can I ask a question of John, please?
Yes.
John, I'm very familiar with your self-help housing. In fact, I had employees years ago that took part in it in the subdivision, single family end of it. And they were there working on weekends and after school at work, et cetera, helping to build that. Is that still prominent or will that be involved in this kind of a structure?
Yeah, so Don, that won't be part of this. That's obviously that was single family, and you know that's where our name came from. 50 years ago, we started doing single family and helping people build their own homes, which is what you're talking about. We are still doing that today. We hope to do about 30 of those a year. Although there's some struggling to try and find property values that will make that work for the end users, but it's still very much a part of who we are 50 years later, and we will still continue to do that. But obviously today's presentation is a multifamily site, but sweat equity is near and dear to our hearts. Thank you.
All right, so can everybody hear me fine?
Not really.
You're a little broken up, Steve.
Can you guys hear me?
Not very well.
Closer to the mic, maybe.
What are you trying to set up?
Mr. Orozco, you might want to check if you're on Bluetooth because that might also affect the quality of sound.
Can you guys hear me fine now?
No, it's cutting off.
You know, Holly, do you have that presentation? And if my audio is a little clearer, I might be able to actually pinch hint for Stephen.
Mr. Fowler, we are pulling the PowerPoint presentation.
That looks great. So I think there it goes. So Stephen has a presentation just looking at this. I'll kind of run through it. And Holly, if you can advance it for us. So we're here to talk about, obviously, Rolling Hills 3, Bennett Way. So go forward. And we wanted to...
Next slide, please.
Yep, next slide. We're all challenged.
Everybody's running around here.
Okay, we're going to pitch in for Holly as well. Let's see.
I don't have control of the slide.
Oh, you don't? Okay. I wonder if
Do you have control of it?
Stephen, you might have control of it, and I can do the audio.
And you need to put it in the PowerPoint to you.
There's a magical hand out there somewhere. Oh. All right, so we wanted to give you a little picture, a little rendering of what the site will look like coming off of Bennett there. So you see this. It sits back a little bit. There's a bridge over the creek. Next slide.
Okay.
We only have 10 minutes, people. So,
John, we have all your stuff in our packets.
Do you have this whole slideshow, Mike?
I don't know if we have the whole slideshow, but we certainly have all this material, I'm pretty sure.
I think you do, too. And
looks like you've got it going now.
Okay.
Let's just roll through it, because I don't want to bore the commissioners and be redundant, but another elevation there, obviously.
That's the Learning Center.
Learning Center. And we're, again, excited to do that. You saw this earlier from Holly, just the parcel where it's located, coming off of Bennett there. And it's the third phase there, as you see, coming off. Size of the parcel, how it's zoned. Keep going. Okay, the parcel is zoned. Yeah, it proposes 28 units. Families is what we're going to do. There's some income, but this always kind of comes up. I'm not so much for the Planning Commission, but, you know, those are the targeted incomes that will be housed here, 21 to 62. A mix of bedrooms. Obviously, this meets TCAC's and others' requirements to have so many one, twos, and three bedrooms, and what those rents will be. And the parking required was 43. We're providing 48 unit configurations and building configurations, the square footages. Again, this, as you said, Mike, this is probably all in your packet, and you probably all looked at it. Keep going. Multifamily is also encouraged. I think we wanted to just talk about Title 22 a little bit. Multifamily dwellings are encouraged in the office, you know, in the zoning and what have you. But you guys would know that.
All right. John, can you hear me?
I can.
All right. So, I can take over for the rest of it. We're almost there. Sorry about that. So, it looks like...
Mr. Arroyo, if you could just... Please state your name for the record, just to be clear.
Steven Orozco. I'm a project manager with People Self-Help Housing. And so this is a site plan, as Holly mentioned before. So with this specific slide, I wanted to showcase that towards the north portion of almost the northeast portion of the site, this is where it's going to connect to Rolling Hills 2 and 3. And we felt that having the pedestrian path for the children instead of having them walk onto Bennett was actually very crucial to have it there for a sense of security and just because the site visibility is a straight shot away. So as mentioned, the Learning Center is going to be for Rolling Hills 1, 2, and 3 residents. And these are after-school programs that we have as well. And then so it's a larger learning center. It's very well designed. It's going to be very energy efficient, and we'll have programs for kids. And all of our programs are actually geared to help students with their after school. And a lot of these students go on to attend college. So we have a pretty good success rate with the program. Next slide, please. So the project amenities, as mentioned, so the on-site basketball court with all of our properties, they are tax credit projects. So we tend to provide some sort of outdoor amenity for the kids. So the tot lot is for kids ages 2 to 12, and we didn't want to forget about the older kids because they still got to play as well. So we provided them a basketball court for children ages 13 to 17 years old. And then so the community garden, what that does, it basically brings everybody together just because, like, they're able to grow, like, as a community. And then the picnic areas and barbecue areas as well, we felt that where we had it was actually pretty nice just because the creek's right there, so they're able to enjoy the outdoor. And then, as mentioned, the pedestrian access that connects the park and ride right across the street. So there is a park and ride, so people can take advantage of that to go to South County, even north, so, and then the pedestrian path that connects Rolling Hills properties. And then we have on-site laundry facilities, so nobody has to go anywhere. Everything is all there for them. So, yeah. Next slide, please. So as Holly had mentioned, so the VFW had comments regarding the neg deck. So we reviewed it with our biologist, and it looks like the project complies.
Oops.
Yeah, hello?
Okay, Steve, keep going.
All right, and then the community benefits. So affordable rent, so as John mentioned, we usually try to shoot from 38% AMI to 60% AMI. And as we know, San Luis Obispo County is one of the more expensive counties throughout the state, so this helps everybody out. With our projects, we also promote diversity by providing different income classes. And then so people were able to mix together. And then the sense of community with the community gardens, and we do a lot of programs for the community to come together, like barbecues, learning activities. So everybody kind of knows each other. So it provides a sense of community. And by reducing homelessness, providing affordable housing, you're actually able to provide people affordable rents. And what that does, it reduces homelessness. So it gives them a place to live. And when I talk about creating short and long-term jobs, so with creating short-term jobs, what I mean by that is we typically have a construction period of about 18 months or so. So we're able to bring people on hand to assist with the construction. And then long-term, we have the after-school program, which the educational coordinators that we have. We have an on-site property manager as well. We have maintenance personnel, and we have people who assist as well. So, and then it also provides housing for the members of the community. So anybody local within the county who's looking for housing, we try to provide them housing so that they don't have to drive as far from their work. And then next slide. And then so here's the site plan. I wanted to showcase this as well. The site plan, the area is very well vegetated, so along the frontage and the rear as well. And we did that as well just to provide like a sense of community and to essentially buffer it as well from Bennett Way. Next slide. And then so here's the elevation, northeast elevation. Next slide. And then here's the southwest elevation as well of the project site. And the next slide. And so here's another elevation. And next slide. And then so here's an elevation of the community center. And then I think that's all we have. So next slide. And if you guys have any questions, feel free to shoot me your questions. Thank you.
I have a question about stormwater drainage, and it looks like you've used a fairly large portion of the property for hard surface. Will the storm water drainage go into that creek? And if so, what will the effect of that be?
So the storm water will actually be caught before it goes onto the creek. So it's going to be filtered. It's going to be a filtered system there. And then before it drains onto the creek, so there will be no impact towards the creek.
Whereabouts is that?
So the area will be right underneath the parking lot, and that's the northern parking lot area. Not directly right when you drive in that specific parking lot, but the parking bay in the back.
Okay, so it'll be raised somewhat.
Yes.
Okay.
I have a question.
Yes.
Okay, good morning. First off, congratulations on 50 years, 50 wonderful years in creating housing for this community, which has been one of the biggest challenges. So congrats on that. I'd be remiss for Kathleen from the senior group to ask, part of that diversity, one of the greatest populations that seems to be having problems are single women over the age of 70. And I'm wondering, would that one-bedroom community and one two-bedroom apartments are the kinds of things they're looking for. Would that be part of the mix, too?
So with all of our properties, everybody's welcome to apply. And then so we do have wait lists as well. So we take all different, like, populations. If they're looking specifically to be like around the, like, a senior community as well, we do have a project that's being built, Templeton Place 2, and it's coming online November 2nd, and that's off Peterson Ranch Road. So that's right around the corner. But typically this project, we could accommodate that population as well. But this specific project, we're gearing it towards families. That's why we usually do larger bedrooms as well, 2 to 3 bedrooms. Mm-hmm. And with this project, we have 1, 2, and 3 bedrooms, but definitely the one bedrooms could be used for that.
Yeah, great. That sounds all good. And it's not too far from downtown. I like the walking path. I think for the kids, that's really critical. And, you know, people could be working at all that medical facilities there. And there's so many offices. So thank you. Thank you for those answers.
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Is there any more questions from the commission directly? No. Now open it up for public comment.
Thank you, Chair Brown. We don't have pre-recorded messages for this item, but I would like to invite members of the public wishing to speak on this item to do so by using the raise hand feature at the bottom of your screen or by pressing *9 at this time. And I'll just give it a few seconds to see if we have any requests. I'm seeing no requests to speak, Chair.
Okay, that will close the item for public comment and bring it back to commission.
Well, Mr. Chairman, first of all, let me also say congratulations to Peoples for not only the time, but all the work that you guys have done. This is exactly the kind of housing that we should be promoting in the county and the region. Not only does it provide family housing and affordable housing, but it provides, Peoples always provides the amenities that are needed with it, like the Learning Center. And as managers of the project, you really couldn't ask for anybody to do more. So I would agree that the analysis with the by the biologist seems to suggest that there really is no need for further mitigations other than checking for the nesting season for the vireo. Other than that, I would enthusiastically support this project. And again, congratulations.
Thank you. My comments would be already taken by the past two commissioners. Ditto all of that and above. And I'm very familiar with this group from way back when. So congratulations on your 50th. And if there's no other further questions, I'll go ahead and move to approve the conditional use permit DRC 2019-00260 based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and the conditions listed in Exhibit B, and adopt the negative deck according to the CEQA code 21006.
Second it.
Well.
Okay, we have a motion. We have a motion and a second. Danielle, could you call the roll, please?
Sorry, who was the second? Was it Commissioner Dawn or Multi?
I think it was Dawn. She got there a millisecond earlier.
Great. Thank you. Commissioner Campbell?
Yes.
Commissioner Dawn Ortiz?
Yes.
Commissioner Multari?
Yes.
Chair Brown?
Yes.
Motion passes. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Okay, it's about 9:50. Would you like to take a break now or move on to the next item?
Let's see if we can get this next item done before 10:30. Is that okay?
Everybody agree? Okay, Danielle?
Great,
number four is Blue Diamond LLC.
Great, thank you. Hearing item number four is a hearing to consider a request by Blue Diamond LLC to modify conditional use permit DRC 2018-00118 that authorized a 1,650 square foot combined non-storefront cannabis dispensary and a cannabis distribution business within an existing 3,300 square foot building located in an established business park. County file number DRC 2020-00080, Supervisorial District 4, Project Manager Ian Landreth. Mr. Landreth, if your presentation is on the screen, if you could just set it to presentation mode and please proceed.
Okay, thank you, Danielle. Can everybody hear me?
Yes.
Good morning, Chairman Brown and members of the Commission. Again, my name is Ian Landreth with the Planning and Building Department, and I will be presenting the Blue Diamond LLC Project Modification Conditional Use Permit DRC 2020-00080. So the project description before you today, again, is the modification of DRC 2018-00118, conditions of approval to increase the delivery drivers and the delivery vehicles for the non-storefront dispensary operations from 2 to 11. A conditional use permit is required because the proposed project modification relates to and directly conflicts with a project feature that was specifically addressed in the conditions of approval for a previously approved project, and that would be the project above. A little bit of history here on the project. The conditional use permit we just discussed was for a combined non-storefront dispensary and cannabis distribution business within an existing 1,650 square foot warehouse. They were approved to have a maximum of 5 full-time equivalent employees, as well as a maximum of 2 delivery vehicles. There was some enforcement history on this this project site. There was a case that was opened in response to a quarterly monitoring program compliance inspection, which is something that cannabis cultivators or cannabis operators, if you will, who have received land use permit approval are required to enter into the cannabis monitoring program, which has quarterly monitoring inspections to ensure that operations are in compliance with local and state regulations. It was later determined that the project modification request we are discussing today was under review, and no notice of violation was issued as a result. A vicinity map here of the project site. The project is located within the Oceano URL, the city of Grover Beaches to the north, and we have Highway 1 and the coast to the west. As far as land use category goes, the project site is located in an established business park. It is within the commercial services land use zone. It's surrounded by residential single family, multifamily, some industrial, as well as the city there to the north, which directly adjacent to the project site to the north would be the strawberry fields or agriculture. An aerial of the site, just to provide you with a more detailed look of the project site as well as the surrounding area. A site plan has been provided by the applicant, which provides details as to the specific suite 9, where the operation has been currently operating. The existing floor layout for the operation, again, this will not be changing. The only changes being made are to the employees and numbers vehicles within their fleet. The project complies with the location and setback standards required by the Cannabis Land Use Ordinance. The project has been conditioned to limit delivery activities between the hours of 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. The project's been conditioned to limit any activity between 8 p.m. and 10 p.m. to closing procedures only. This is to primarily involve employees who are going to clock out at the end of their shift or clean up before leaving the site. It also complies with the security requirements, odor, as well as parking. And actually, one thing I would like to note is the parking does have an available extra lot, which is to the northwest or directly adjacent to the west of the site. You can actually see that here. And this would be somewhere that additional vehicles could be stored, but the project does have two assigned parking spots to it already. We did receive comments from the San Luis Obispo County Sheriff's Department after your finalization of the staff report. Within further discussions with the Sheriff's Department, which we've summarized in the staff memos that you received prior to this morning's hearing, within those memos, we discussed that there was additional conversations with the sheriff and the applicant. We learned the sheriff was not supportive of adding 9 delivery vehicles to the existing operations, but is more comfortable with the addition of 4 delivery vehicles. I apologize. That should say 6 delivery. Oh, no, that's right. 4 delivery vehicles to existing operations for a total of 6 vehicles and then 5 employees. If I want to mention here that if the commission feels that they would like additional information or if they feel that more discussion between the sheriff and the applicant would be helpful, they do have that option to continue the item. I would also like to mention that shortly before this hearing began, we received an additional comment letter from the sheriff's department, and would also like to mention that Detective Hernandez with the sheriff's department, as well as the applicant and their legal team, are here if there are any questions for them. Based off of this, we recommend finding the project consistent with the previously approved environmental determination and recommend approval of conditional use permit DRC 2020-00080 based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and the conditions listed in Exhibit B. And staff is available for any questions. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question.
Yes.
Actually, I have two. Ian, your recommendation, is that with the what you originally recommended, or is it now with the reduced number down to 6?
So this is Ian Landreth. Thank you, Mike Moltari. And so that was our original recommendation. And based off of where we're at today with the conversations between the sheriff, the applicant, and planning staff, we have asked the sheriff to be here to provide any kind of additional information to the commission so that if the commission feels that there needs to be additional vehicles, less vehicles, they can make a more sound decision, as well as having the applicant here to provide any kind of comment on the business operations and how that will run.
But what's staff's recommendation now? I'm just asking, are you still recommending the 11, or are you
recommending? We would still be recommending the 11 vehicles at this time.
And in the memo that you sent to us a couple days ago or yesterday, it refers to recent events have caused concern. What were the recent events that caused concern?
I'm sorry. Was this the first memo? There was to you.
Well, it refers to the sheriff's being concerned because of recent events, but it didn't say what the recent events were.
Okay. We do have Detective Hernandez here from the Sheriff's Department. If he'd like to discuss that, I would point that question to him.
Okay. Detective Hernandez, can you hear me?
Yes, good morning, Chairman Brown and honorable members of the Planning Commission. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. So as far as the standpoint of where the sheriff's office was when the actions were reviewed, there were persons on site that were not supposed to actually be there, and some of the vehicles that were operating had not been verified by the sheriff's office yet, along with different features on the vehicle, included but not limited to the GPS tracking of each vehicle, was not operational on the vehicles at the time of the inspection.
Okay. And so what was the significance of the people that were there but were not supposed to be there? Are they visitors or employees or?
It was an individual who was stated as a consultant, but based on determinations of what we factored out, there was a greater relationship than what was portrayed as just a consultant.
An additional employee, is that what you're inferring?
Yes. Based on the investigation that I completed, it appeared that this consultant was acting more as a manager and or owner of the specific company rather than just as a consultant. And inside the investigation, it was found that this individual shared children in common with one of the owners of Blue Diamond. And this was not previously mentioned within the different contacts that had taken place at the facility. We were advised that there was no relationship whatsoever or friendship with this specific individual.
Okay, so they misinterpreted the people on site.
And Chairman Brown, Bryan Sackler County Council's office. I think there's also just because I didn't hear it specifically, but there was underlying concern. My understanding from the sheriff's background investigation, whether this person would be eligible to be listed as an owner of a cannabis business, just so that's clear.
Oh, I see.
Okay, thank you. Maybe we should hear. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. Are you through, Mr. Montari?
I am. Sorry.
I'm trying to get my hand around this, and we, I'm sure, approved this many moons ago, and I forget exactly what the operation consists of. But if it's a distribution situation, something's got to be packaged, et cetera, and it looks like we're only looking at the back half of the situation. They don't have that large warehouse or anything, so something's got to come in if it's going to go out. And so that means a lot more stuff coming in if they need 9 more cars to take it out. So has that aspect been investigated?
Brian, I'll allow you to take this.
And Brian Sackler County Council's office, if Ian's on the line, I would defer to him regarding those capacity-related concerns.
I'm sorry, can you repeat the question?
Yes, Ian, I'm looking at the need for 9 more cars to go out and distribute a product, but nobody has mentioned where the product's coming from that they need 9 additional cars to distribute. So that must mean there's 9 additional cars or 3 more big trucks or whatever bringing it in so it can go out. What say you there?
Right. So typically with this operation, which your commission approved many moons ago, as you had mentioned, they were approved for non-storefront dispensary activities, which is the delivery of product to end users. And distribution activities, the big trucks coming in, typical operations will usually receive a weekly order of cannabis products that arrive to their facility, which are then offloaded and securely stored and tagged and entered into the metric system, which is the state's tracking system. And so by adding these additional vehicles, it's to increase the demand that has arisen due to COVID, and to meet the demand of the customer so that they have more drivers available and they're not having to turn away orders because they don't have the staff. But we also do have the applicant here if there's any additional questions specific to those operations, but this wouldn't be increasing so much the frequency of distribution trips, more so the increase in dispensary trips.
Okay. Well, maybe we should hear from the applicant.
I'm still confused. If you're going to send 11 cars out with stuff when you used to send two, that stuff's got to get there somehow. And was this thing approved based on the amount of activity on that particular parcel of ground having to do with traffic and one thing after another when we talked about this when they were first approved? Yet this increase in business is more than just adding six cars to park there, nine cars.
Yes, and before we jump to, this is Ian Landreth again, before we jump to the applicant to kind of go through their operations. With the traffic study that was previously submitted on this project, we did receive a revised traffic study as part of this project modification. And that was also mentioned in the staff report. And there was no significant impact that was determined from the increase to these employees. This project was also referred to the Department of Public Works, who did not have any concerns with the increase in traffic per se, more so with just aesthetics of the parking lot on site, which is something that the business is doing as they're operating in terms of just cleaning it up.
Thank you, Ian. That addresses my question. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, so would the applicant like to make a statement or agent?
Thank you, Chair. We do have Benjamin Resnick and Sina Samini. They are now able to speak. If you could unmute your connection, this is your opportunity to speak on this matter.
Good morning, Commissioners. My name is Sina Samimi, and I'm a land use representative for the applicant with Diamond in this matter. I appreciate all the Commissioners' questions, and I think I'll be able to shed some light on some of those questions given and be able to give some background not only to the Commissioners' questions but also to Detective Hernandez's concerns. So let's just start off with a little bit of background. When this was originally approved by the commission, when this was originally approved, there were two delivery cars that were approved and a full-time of five employees. Now, what's happening with this application is that there's only going to be an increase of five drivers at any given time, and that's not entirely clear from the materials that are before you. We did submit a supplemental letter, which maybe you haven't had a chance to look at yet, but it does clarify some of those issues. And so what I'd like to emphasize here is that we're not very far away from what the sheriff has proposed here with the additional drivers. What's being proposed is that in the AM shift, there's going to be four drivers total. And in the PM shift, there's going to be seven drivers in total. So at any given time, we're actually only adding five additional drivers to the total scope of the program here and of operations. And on top of that, there's already five employees that are approved, and there's only an addition of seven total employees. An additional of five to give us the total of the employees that are going to be in operations. And so that's a key difference to address Commissioner Campbell's issue. It's not going to be nine additional vehicles on the site. It's going to be, you know, four in the AM shift total, seven in the PM shift total. And on top of that, those deliveries plan to be staggered. So the way that the business operations are currently is that there are pre-orders that come in from the day before or previous days. And so when the first driver arrives at the site, the car gets loaded with the product, and that driver goes out and delivers to the various individuals who had the customers who had ordered from the previous day. And they also take additional orders during the day, and those cars get loaded up and they get sent out into the field. So at the actual location, you're not really going to have a big increase of number of cars and traffic or circulation or anything like that. And that's confirmed in the updated traffic study that was an attachment to Ian Landreth's staff report. And there's one other thing here. The sheriff had raised concerns regarding prior history, and it seemed like some of the commissioners were a little bit confused about that. One of the consultants for the project, who had been, you know, a consultant primarily for operations in terms of marketing, online marketing, had been on the site, and there was nothing in the approval, any of the entitlements or any of the approvals that said he's not allowed to be on site. What the approvals say is that if you have a consultant on site, there's certain requirements, such as the consultant needs to be wearing a badge, needs to be easily identifiable, etc. And Blue Diamond has always complied with all of those requirements. And beyond that, it's a little bit of a weird situation. It just so happens that on the day of the sheriff's inspection of the property to address the GPS system and the cameras not being operational, all of those systems have always been operational. Let me just be very clear about that. It just so happened that on the day that the sheriff did his report, there was one driver that was out in the field. The other driver wasn't dispatched at the time. And the one driver that was out in the field happened to be locked out of his vehicle. And so we have records that we've presented to the county, and Mr. Stack and Ian Landreth are well aware of this stuff. We've provided declarations from the driver. They actually had to send somebody to the Nissan dealership to get an additional key on that particular day to get the driver back into his car, because this was a new vehicle that was in operation. So everything that the sheriff had concerns about, A, they've been addressed already, and B, they didn't really have any really impact on the operations. I should say that when the sheriff's report, well, first of all, there was no notice of violation that was ever issued. And secondly, when the sheriff's report came back with these allegations of, you know, potential violations with respect to the GPS and the video and the consultant who supposedly wasn't supposed to be at the site, we, on behalf of Blue Diamond, filed a lawsuit for a temporary restraining order to be able to continue operations, because what happened as a result of the sheriff's report is that the business license was going to be revoked. So we brought a case, and we were actually successful. The judge looked at all the evidence that we had presented with our declarations, with the receipts from the Nissan dealership that the guy was locked out of his car, and all of this evidence, in addition to the consultant who supposedly wasn't supposed to be on the site. If you actually look at the conditional use permit, there's nothing about that in any of the conditions of approval. So the judge agreed with us, issued a temporary restraining order saying that the county is not able to revoke the business license. And so I think we've put the sheriff's concerns to rest. And I should also let the commissioners know that there was a settlement agreement reached after the judge granted our temporary restraining order, in which that consultant who was on site is no longer going to be on site anyway. And to address Mr. Stack's issue that he may have not been eligible to be an owner, I should make this very clear. The consultant in question was never an owner of the property, was never, an owner of the business, and was never a manager or director or anything of that nature. He was always a consultant. And there was nothing illegal or against any of the approvals of him being present at the site to begin with. But even so, we have reached a settlement agreement agreeing that that particular consultant cannot be physically present at the site or involved in those types of operations anymore either. So it's pretty clear that all of those issues have been addressed. So I think I've addressed all of the questions. So going to Commissioner Campbell's concern was, well, how are we going to get to the 9 additional drivers? Is that going to create traffic problems or, you know, additional deliveries being done? The answer is not really. It's not that big of an expansion. We're talking about at any given time there being 5 additional cars. And if you look at Mr. Landreth had a slide up on what the sheriff's agreement would be to, and the sheriff is agreeing to 4 additional vehicles for a total of 6. What we're talking about is a total of 7. Now, I should explain why we're asking for 11. Why doesn't this request say we want 7 total cars instead of 11 total cars, right? Because that's really what's happening here. And that's really because of the history of enforcement at the site. When the operation was approved for 2 vehicles initially, there was a little bit of confusion as to, you know, whether those 2 vehicles, as long as they are all compliant with the entitlements that have been issued for this project, whether they can operate 2 vehicles at any given time. And the sheriff's interpretation of that is, no, every vehicle that you're using needs to be separately approved by the county. So that's why we're asking for these 11 vehicles, because those 4 a.m. shift vehicles and the 7 p.m. shift vehicles aren't necessarily going to be the same cars. So we need to have the 11 vehicles inspected and approved by the sheriff's office so that we can use the total of 11, even though there's not even going to be more than 7 in operation at any given time. So hopefully that clarifies some of the questions of the commission. And there's not really that much daylight between what we're proposing and what the sheriff agrees with in any event. I think, unless the commissioners have any further questions, I've addressed all the issues.
Okay, thank you. It's still a little hazy to me. I'm not sure how all this fits together. I would suggest a condition of approval that the maximum number of vehicles be stated. The maximum vehicles used at one point in time. I think what you're saying is you're going to have a fleet of 11, but only, 7 will be used. Is that basically the...
The highest amount was 7, I believe.
Yeah.
That's correct.
And so maybe that should be stated as a condition of approval.
Chair Brown, I am showing Steve McMaster's principal environmental specialist requesting to speak, and also we haven't opened the item up for public comment.
Right. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Steve McMaster is principal environmental specialist. I think to your kind of wish to see a condition, I think possibly taking public comment and then allowing Detective Hernandez to respond. Ian will be ready to walk through the condition. I think our recommended modified conditions do just what you indicated. So perhaps after public comment, you can Ian can walk through those. I think it probably would accomplish what you were indicating you want to see.
Okay, at this point, we will open it up to the public.
Thank you, Chair. We do not have pre-recorded messages for this item. However, I would like to invite members of the public wishing to speak on this item to do so by using the raise hand feature at the bottom of your screen if you are joining via Zoom, or press *9 if you are joining via telephone. And I'll just give it a few seconds to see if we have any requests. And I am seeing no requests to speak, Chair.
Okay, so that would close this for public comment. Commissioners? Well, I think we're going to hear from Ian about the
Want to walk through the condition for us?
Yes, this is Ian. I believe Steve mentioned that we would also probably benefit from hearing from Detective Hernandez, kind of expanding on his recommendation. If
sure.
Okay.
Well, somebody.
Either one.
Okay, again, I'm Detective Hernandez, San Luis Obispo County Sheriff's Office. I'm currently assigned to the San Luis Obispo County Cannabis Enforcement Unit. I investigate legal and illegal cannabis activities, which allows me to understand the current landscape associated with legal and illegal cannabis operations. On July 1st of 2020, I received an email from Ian Landreth of the San Luis Obispo County Planning and Building Department. The email stated Blue Diamond LLC wanted to modify the conditions of approval for their DRC 2018-118 and to increase the number of dispensary delivery vehicles from 2 to 11, the number of delivery staff from 2 to 11 as well. Attached to the email was a brief plan for operations and a traffic study, which was completed on January 14th of 2020. Based on the information I reviewed, I advised Ian Landreth that at this time I could not support this type of expansion for this specific business. The San Luis Obispo County Sheriff's Office is committed to promoting the health, safety, and welfare of our residents. The commitment is reflected in the regulations and procedures that must be followed to conduct cannabis business operations in the county of San Luis Obispo. Blue Diamond is located on Pike Lane in an industrial complex. Blue Diamond's facility is easily visible from Pike Lane, but its operations are not when vehicles enter and exit the facility. The specific complex Blue Diamond is located in was not occupied when Blue Diamond first opened its business. Currently, the industrial complex is completely occupied. Many of the businesses that inhabit this complex are automotive repair-related businesses. When cannabis projects are developed and the security plan is physically set in place, a goal of the San Luis Obispo County Sheriff's Office is for these cannabis businesses to blend in within their surroundings. The Sheriff's Office believes this blending in process adds an additional layer of security. Currently, with only two vehicles, the amount of traffic that enters and exits Blue Diamond's facility is very minimal. With the expansion of 11 cars, this would greatly affect the amount of traffic entering and exiting the industrial complex where Blue Diamond is located, and with the facility's garage door opening and closing, that much more would bring a greater amount of attention to Blue Diamond's facility. This type of attention could potentially put the community and Blue Diamond in danger. On July 21st, 2020, I was asked to be a part of a phone conference with Blue Diamond and their counsel. Blue Diamond's counsel could not provide me with what Blue Diamond's specific requests were other than what was detailed in the proposed operation plans for more vehicles and staff. Please refer to attachment one of my report. I advised Blue Diamond's counsel that based on land use related concerns and Blue Diamond's history during Blue Diamond's first year of operation, I would only propose the use of two additional vehicles and one standby vehicle. Overall, this would allow Blue Diamond to have four delivery vehicles and one delivery vehicle to be used in the event of a vehicle going down for service or other type of event that would leave it inoperable, meaning four vehicles operating all day with no alternating times and shifts. Blue Diamond's counsel said that they would continue forward to the Planning Commission meeting and would reject my recommendation. Blue Diamond's counsel did suggest that Blue Diamond was open to a phasing process where a certain number of vehicles would be added after 30 days and then again at 60 days. Blue Diamond's counsel said that Blue Diamond's current capacity, two drivers, cannot properly service their current and growing demands of customers and are unable to sustain operations. On July 22nd, 2020, I received further information from Blue Diamond. Blue Diamond stated they were seeking the approval of only five additional vehicles to be in operation at any given time. Although the application seeks approval for a total of 11 cars and employees, four drivers would be operating the morning shift and seven drivers would be operating during the afternoon evening shift. Excuse me. Currently in San Luis Obispo County, the average number of drivers / vehicles for a non-storefront delivery cannabis business is 3.16 drivers. During discussions with other non-storefront delivery business owners, they have advised me that since COVID-19, they have seen a dramatic rise in business and have hit record sales and numbers. These owners advised me that they had to prepare their orders differently and systemically set up their processes different than before. I understand the challenge that Blue Diamond is currently up against with only two delivery vehicles, but the request for the number of vehicles and the amount of expansion they are planning for does not fit within the facility they are currently working out of. To put more precisely, their facility's location can only accommodate for so much growth. If Blue Diamond's facility was located in a different area with less in-and-out traffic of other vehicles, general public persons entering, exiting storefront businesses, the sheriff's office would have less concern for public safety-related issues. If Blue Diamond is planning to seek further expansion to different cities within Santa Barbara County and Ventura County, it is my recommendation that Blue Diamond should be looking into building out another facility in either of those counties. Facilities currently operating in these jurisdictions are doing specifically this and making their way into San Luis Obispo County rather than just expanding the number of vehicles. It should be noted that these sales outside of San Luis Obispo County are not taxed to the San Luis Obispo County, but rather taxed where the sales are taking place. For example, if an individual is to make a purchase of cannabis in Santa Barbara from Blue Diamond, San Luis Obispo County would not see the sales tax from this purchase. Santa Barbara County would. Due to delivery timelines set forth by different municipalities, counties, and the Bureau of Cannabis Control, cannabis non-storefront delivery drivers cannot just send their vehicle to a city 2 hours away for one sale and allow that vehicle to sit in that location for several hours. Per the Bureau of Cannabis Control, California Code of Regulations, Section 5418, parenthetical I, if a licensed retailer's delivery driver does not have any delivery request to be performed for a 30-minute period, the licensed retailer's delivery driver shall not make any additional deliveries and shall return to the licensed premises. Required meal breaks shall not count toward the 30-minute period. Additionally, stated in California Code of Regulations, Section 514, parenthetical J, upon returning to the licensed premises, all undelivered cannabis goods shall be returned to inventory and all necessary inventory and track and trace records shall be updated as appropriate that same day. It will be very challenging for Blue Diamond to correctly and effectively send vehicles out of the county to areas such as Bakersfield, Ventura, and Oxnard to deliver cannabis products within these specific timelines, and it will also be very challenging for the cannabis enforcement unit to know what specific vehicles are operating out of which certain timelines. Based on the different events that have occurred since Blue Diamond has opened and the current style of their operation, Blue Diamond will have to update their style of deliveries. During the most recent quarterly inspection completed at Blue Diamond, several security concerns were raised by the sheriff's office, and their business license was temporarily revoked. If Blue Diamond is planning for the type of expansion that they are hoping for, drastic changes will need to be made with their point-of-sale system, updated inventories models, and receipt printing capabilities in their delivery vehicles. The sheriff's office is recommending the approval of only 6 vehicles total, 5 employees. Further explained, the sheriff's office recommendation would include that Blue Diamond would own or lease all 6 vehicles, and Blue Diamond would no longer be allowed to have their drivers drive their own vehicles for deliveries. 5 vehicles in operation and 1 vehicle on standby. The standby vehicle could be used in the event of a vehicle going down for service or any other type of event that would leave a vehicle inoperable. The purpose of this would allow for a much easier platform to not only work from, but also to enforce. If all 6 vehicles are owned or leased by Blue Diamond, this would guarantee that all the vehicles are all maintained by Blue Diamond, have been verified by the sheriff's office prior to operation, have operable GPS and point-of-sale capabilities in each vehicle. The burden will no longer be on the employee to ensure that these capabilities are operational, but rather Blue Diamond. This recommendation will also create a smoother transition if a driver is to be added to the Blue Diamond staff or removed. This information that is shared with the sheriff's office is also shared with the Bureau of Cannabis Control. Additionally, having 1 vehicle available on standby would allow for a smooth transition used in the event of a vehicle going down out in the field or other type of event that would leave it inoperable. I believe a vehicle for each part of the county would be sufficient for deliveries. One car for north of the Cuesta Grade, Santa Margarita, San Miguel. One car for the coastal area, Los Osos to Ragged Point. One car for central San Luis Obispo County, San Luis Obispo City. And one car for South County, Avila Beach to Napomo. And a single car to float where it is needed. Many of the non-storefront deliveries are currently operating using this model and are finding great success and not running into any type of inconsistent issues, and the platform allows for consistent enforcement as well. Thank you.
Very good.
Thank you. Part of that dissertation, I think, was related to what Commissioner Campbell was speaking about, and that is the overuse of the facility as designed, that it would be quite a different operation than what it was, or it, what it has been acting as, given that much more delivery by a factor of three or four. Did you get that out of that, Commissioner Campbell?
Yes, Anthony did a real good job explaining a lot of things that we never got when we approved this last time, the first time, and I appreciated all that, the ins and outs of what they're faced with and how they're doing. I would have a problem accepting anything short of or above what Sheriff Hernandez or Deputy Hernandez has told us about, so I think that kind of narrows things down for us as to what we might want to approve.
And I feel the same way.
I have some questions, please. So where are the Blue Diamond neighbors? I mean, those in the facility themselves. Is there a notice that has been given to them that there's an expansion? What's happened there, please?
I can address that, Commissioner. We actually submitted supplemental comment letter on...
Who's speaking?
This is Sina Samimi, representative for Blue Diamond. And on July 21st, we submitted a comment letter that was attached to Mr. Landreth's staff report, and it does explain that. It explains that we have approached our neighbors who are in the complex. In fact, there have been two letters of neighboring businesses that actually explain, and it's a very short letter. It's one of them is attached as Exhibit 1 to our letter, and it states that the operation is close to Blue Diamond's cannabis delivery business, and I'm quoting, "Blue Diamond has always been a good neighbor, and we have not had any problems since they started operations within the complex. Christina Valdez, one of Blue Diamond's principals, has informed me that Blue Diamond intends to modify its CUP to allow for more vehicles to be in operation for deliveries. My understanding is that Blue Diamond is currently approved for 2 vehicles and is seeking approval for 11 vehicles to be operating in 2 different shifts. I'm writing to the Planning Commission to confirm that I have no objection to Blue Diamond's business expansion and do not think it will have any effect on my business operations. Therefore, I am in agreement with and support Blue Diamond's application to modify its conditional use permit for the expansion." And that letter comes from Mark's Auto Repair, which is one of the neighboring businesses. And our client has actually reached out, well, on top of the regular notice provisions that go out from the Planning Commission to all people within a certain radius, we've gotten no negative comments. We've gotten nobody who's stood up in opposition for the project, and everyone who we've spoken to has been okay with it. And there's been another letter submitted by a nearby business as well that's substantially similar to the one that I just quoted for you. There's also a couple of things that I do want to address. It sounds like Detective Hernandez's concern is, with the traffic study, with the additional cars in circulation, and that also sounded to be Commissioner Campbell's concern as well. But on the one hand, we have a traffic study that was done by professionals who dedicate their lives to analyzing traffic impact.
Mr. Chairman.
And on the other hand, excuse me?
Go ahead.
And on the other
hand, can we answer the question from Commissioner Ortiz-Legg and not get another
applicant? Oh.
Yeah.
You'll have to wait, Mr. Samina, unless you're asked about that.
So. Okay, well, I thought we were also going to have an opportunity to rebut
No, you're answering questions from the commissioners and actually have all that information. Let's try to focus here a little bit. I'm sorry. Commissioner Ortiz, like, do you have other questions or did he
Yeah, I have questions. So my question then back is to the Sheriff's Department is that if the auto repair places had an increase of business and there was a number of cars that were now coming in, would we have the same kind of monitoring? I mean, I'm a little bit struggling with the ability to tell people how they can expand their business and how they can't. I mean, I understand the public safety and I'm very happy about that. Safety's number one. But I think that I'm also concerned about, you know, us determining how a business expands. And so my question to you is that if any other business within that complex would have an increase of business, would the Sheriff's Department be involved?
Well, no.
I mean, obviously not, right? Right. What I guess I'm trying to figure out is that one, we're not completely explained on the first part on knowing that, okay, one side vehicle in case something breaks down and trying to, I understand you want to keep record of everything as was required by state law, which is what we want to do. However, I am wondering about, you know, us being able to determine that only one spare vehicle is enough. I understand that you want to make sure that they don't have an expansion that's beyond the capacity. But would a phasing in process be something that would be of interest to the Sheriff's Department?
I think the overall goal is kind of what we're looking at. I would have no issue if they had more vehicles available as what we'd like to call as standby vehicles. There would be no issue with that. The biggest thing is the consistency that these vehicles are owned by the business or leased by the business rather than the employee-owned vehicles. It just creates a much more consistent flow of information. Other businesses have moved to this model because all the vehicles are outfitted exactly the same. We have all the information that is foreset with that so that if an employee is either added to the business or has been removed, fired from the business, it keeps the flow of information very consistent, and it actually takes a lot of work off of us and changing our schedules around to go and inspect a vehicle every month or every few weeks if there is that change in different employees. So by these businesses owning their own vehicles, it in some ways it's created protections for the employees, the business, and it allows the enforcement stance to be less involved in a lot of ways. I guess that would be the easiest way to put it because everything is consistent between each vehicle. And that's the biggest goal that I think us at the Sheriff's Office and my office in the Cannabis Enforcement Unit look at.
Okay, I appreciate that clarification. If I may, Chair,
please,
more question.
Excuse me, Dawn. You got some more.
I only wanted to ask.
Just gonna...
Tina. Yeah, if this goal of having the business own the vehicles is doable,
or leased.
Yeah.
Yes, or Commissioner. Leased. In fact, we would be okay with even having a condition of approval. That all the vehicles would have to be owned or leased by the business. So okay. We have no problem with that at all. That's actually the plan anyway.
Okay.
So that's
thank you. That's all I wanted to clarify. I'm done.
I was just curious, relative to that letter that was read, who does all the service and maintenance on those vehicles?
I don't know the answer to that question. I would have to ask my clients. I'm not sure.
It seemed logical to me that it would be done there on the same premise, and that would kind of delete the letter that came in.
Well, if I might, I've been down to the site a few times, and it's a very busy site these days. When they first applied, it was pretty dead, and now You have repair businesses on both sides. One's kind of an RV and truck repair. And so I don't think that repairing the vehicles of the cannabis operation is relevant one way or the other. They're really kind of more commercial repair places, it seemed. And there was a lot of activity down there. It's, Mr. Chairman, it seems to me that this isn't ready for us to act on today. It sounds like they're close to a solution, and maybe we need to continue this maybe to the afternoon or maybe to another day so they can come up with some solution that is acceptable to the sheriff's department and to the applicant if possible. I think they're really close, but I'm kind of uncomfortable crafting a condition without they getting together and figuring this out.
Yeah, I am too. And you know, the original permit, one of the conditions was the two vehicles. I mean, that it's for whatever reason, the commission felt that was the number of vehicles that suited that business in that location, and now we're going from two to a very large number. And I'm also uncomfortable with the sheriff's viewpoint.
I agree with Commissioner Moltari. Yeah,
but
I have to agree. Also, the sheriff came up with some things that I never realized they were doing, and it's rather complex. And I think we need time to study that a little bit more. So I agree with that.
Chairman Brown,
staff.
Brian Stack with County Council's Office, if I may, I'd be happy, you know, during your morning break to reach out to applicant's representative to see if this is something they think we want to try and wrap up today, or if they would agree to just continue it to another date, and then we could report back after the break.
Well, if the only issue is the number of cars, it seems to me we should be able to wrap it up.
Why don't we take a break and let them work on it, and then we can come back to that?
Okay.
Thank you for that opportunity, Commissioners. Yeah, we agree. I can talk to Mr. Stack offline, and hopefully we can come to an agreement.
Okay.
I'd also like to see if there's an opportunity to respond to some of the issues that Detective Hernandez brought up. But
when we get back from break, which will be 11 o'clock, is 20 minutes enough for staff?
That's fine. Yep.
Okay. Yep. 11 o'clock.
This Thank time, you. Please, commissioners, please go ahead and mute your line and turn off your video. And the clerk will announce and give everyone a heads up when we will be reconvening the meeting. Thank you.
Okay, commissioners, we've taken, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. We've taken another 10 minutes, and do we have any results from staff about this item? We're going to perhaps have the sheriff and the applicant make some new recommendations.
Right. Sure. I'll chime in first. Brian Stack with County Council's office. I did have discussions with applicant's representative, and I believe we've come up with an agreement that is satisfactory with the sheriff's office and also planning, and planning has drafted conditions of approval. They have not been seen by the applicant because it's kind of hard to do that all virtually. So I would just ask if the chairman's prerogative to give applicant's counsel opportunity after the proposed changes are modified to weigh in whether they agree with them.
Okay.
Okay.
So who's next?
I think Ian is, this is Steve McMaster's planning. I think Ian is ready to share his screen with the revised conditions.
Thank you.
Okay, everybody hear me? And everybody see? So number one, here we have the revised conditions. We have your attention here first on C, max of 46 delivery trips. One trip equals one departure and one return per day with a maximum of 5 delivery vehicles plus 2 standby vehicles and 1 distribution vehicle cannot be used for delivery. All delivery and distribution vehicles shall be owned or leased by the business. Hours of operation between 8 a.m. This stuff has remained the same. I will direct your attention down to number 14, where we have a maximum of 11 employees. Live scan is required, including the business owner. Maximum of 5 delivery vehicles and 1 distribution vehicle may be in operation at any time. And that would conclude the revisions that were made.
And Ian, is Detective Hernandez and the Sheriff's Department okay with this?
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Are there any other issues? Well,
does the applicant's representative, are they okay with these changes?
There's actually one. I think this is an error. Correct me if I'm wrong, because when I spoke to Mr. Stack, we talked about a maximum of 11 full-time equivalent. So I don't think that language should be stricken about the full-time equivalent. I think that was just an error. I could, unless I missed something, but I agree. Everything else is correct. We have agreed to the live scan, and the 11 needs to be full-time equivalent. And one thing that we didn't talk about is that would include the business owner. I don't quite understand that. The business owner is considered an employee under this crafting.
So Brian Sack with County Council's office, I think the idea behind the removal of a full-time equivalent was just to provide clarity to the sheriff's office of about how many employees it can issue approvals for, and not necessarily get into, you know, full-time equivalent and whether they will try and divide that up among more employees. So again, it's just to provide clarity. And then including the business owner, I think is of the same thing, so that the sheriff's office knows how many people can actually be approved to be on that site.
This is Daniela, County Planning staff. I would just like to advise Mr. Samini, if you could please limit your comments to only when the commission addresses you personally.
Well, we asked him, Daniel.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay.
I'm a little confused because I'm hearing back to 11 cars as a maximum. I thought we'd reduced it.
No, it's 5 delivery vehicles and 1 distribution.
Okay.
2 standby and 1 distribution. So if the sheriff's department's okay with that.
You know. Yeah, and that's what I agree. But the applicant just mentioned 11 again as the max.
That's a number of employees, not number of cars necessarily.
Okay, I didn't pick that up.
Okay.
Any other commissioner comments on these changes? Okay. Anything else that commissioners would like to discuss about the
Ortiz leg with us? Oh, there she is. I'm sorry.
I'm here.
You're just not on my screen. I didn't see.
Actually, lucky you. So, Ian, back to Ian, though, on the full-time equivalent, or is that accurate that that should have been not deleted? I mean,
I would reiterate what Brian Stack had mentioned. I think it was just to provide greater clarity as to the number of employees that the sheriff would be running background checks on rather than it be distributed.
Okay.
Yeah.
I see. So 11 total. Okay. That's fine. Good. Just wanted to hear back from you. Thank you.
No problem.
Okay.
Any other issues on the application, commissioners, that you'd like to go over? No? All right. I guess it's time for a motion. Okay. We have taken public comment.
Is there any other public comment on the revised conditions? I guess not.
I'd like to advise the commission that we do have a member of the public joining us that is requesting, has their hand raised. I would just like to, would you like me to unmute their connection?
I have closed it for comments, but we've made some changes here, so a comment relative to these changes would be acceptable.
Okay. So caller ending with the last three numbers of 753, we will unmute your connection, and if you could please state your name for the record.
Yeah, hi, I'm Murray Powell. I'm a Templeton resident, vice chair of TAG. I'm speaking today as a private resident of the county. I actually have a point of order on this whole process, and this is a public hearing, and I object to the fact that there was a recess and a private negotiating meeting that changed the terms of what was being presented to the commission, and I believe that this whole hearing needs to be discontinued to a later date, and that whatever the revised negotiated settlement is on the conditions of this approval need to be re-noticed to the public and heard at a future meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr.
Okay. You know, we often do this, but I certainly will take the advice of county council.
Brian Sack with county council's office. This is part of the deliberations, and you received input from both planning staff, county sheriff staff, as well as the applicant, and this is commonplace, and it's not a point of order that would require any further continuance or re-noticing of this item.
And just to be clear, the commissioners did not participate in the negotiations or the discussion when we weren't public. It was staff that did it and came back to us with a solution.
Okay, so commissioners, is it time for a motion?
Yes. I would like to take the recommended action to approve the conditional use permit DRC 2020-00080 based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and the conditions listed in Exhibit B, with including the amendments to those conditions, and to that also the environmental determination categorically as CEQA for the guidelines.
Second.
Okay. Clerk, can you call the roll, please?
Sure. Commissioner Don Ortiz-Lake?
Yes.
Commissioner Moltari?
Yes.
Commissioner Campbell?
Yes.
And Chair Brown?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. We have next item, number five, Pegaso. Would you introduce that item, please, Clerk?
Sure. Thank you, Chair. Hearing item number five is a hearing to consider a request by Pegaso, Inc. for a conditional use permit to allow for a multi-phase development of cannabis activities, county file number DRC 2018-00177, Supervisorial District 5, Project Manager Eric Hughes. And at this time, I would like to advise members of the public wishing to speak on this item, please use the raise hand feature at the bottom of your screen, or if you are calling by phone, please press star 9. So that when the chair calls for public comment, you are ready. So, Mr. Hughes, if you could please pull up your presentation.
Thank you, Ms. Chavez. Eric Hughes, County Planning and Building. Real quick, I would like to request that this hearing be continued off calendar due to a noticing deficiency. However, I would like to request that the commission allow the staff presentation and public comment, and that the commission provide direction to staff regarding any specific information requests or questions to be addressed by staff, and staff can come back and present the findings at the next hearing. Also, on the advice of council, staff asks that the discussion be limited to staff presentations, the applicant presentation, public comment, and commission questions, and that there are no deliberations and no final actions or tentative decisions on the project.
Well, Eric, I have a question about that procedurally. If we open it up for the public and we take public testimony and then you guys bring it back on another date, are we going to have public testimony then too? And besides, if there is a noticing deficiency, that means there may be people that would be interested in what's in our preliminary presentation who aren't able to attend or didn't know about it today. So I'm a little curious about the two-step thing here.
I am too. I've found often that we end up doing another round of public comments regardless of whether or not we think we've wrapped up public comment the first time. So I guess County Council, can you help us, Brian?
Yeah. Brian Stack with County Council's office. As Mr. Hughes stated, there is a notice issue as far that would prevent the approval of this project, but it has been properly agendized, and as a Brown Act body, you can hear this item. You just can't make any final action on it, and including any tentative action. It would be completely at the chair or the commission's prerogative to, in essence, open it up this time to see if there are questions that you might have to provide staff to provide further information on when you come back, or just handle it at the continued hearing all at one swing. It would be entirely up to the commission's prerogative.
Well, my preference would be to do it all at once, because I'd rather not have this is a complex application, and hearing the staff presentation then picking it up 2 weeks later would be disjointed.
And Chair Brown, this is John O'Sullivan here with County Council's office. To also answer your question, the Brown Act does allow you to preclude, you know, people from speaking twice if their comments are redundant. I know that sometimes that is difficult in the moment to police, if you will.
Right.
But you do not have to you do not need to allow people to have the ability to speak once and then say the exact same thing again. Just knowing that, you know, it is a little bit difficult administratively.
Right. I know it is very difficult. I think my advice would be to continue this item. Commissioners, would you give me some of your advice? I heard Mr. Attari suggest we might continue this. Any other commission comments? then I think we need...
Chair Brown, this is John again from County Council. If it is agendized, you do need to open it up to public comment.
Okay.
It's going to happen now.
So, public comment.
If we're going to go that far, we might as well do what he suggests then.
Follow the suggestion as was presented to us. And then when it comes to Commissioner Moultrie, what do you suggest?
Well, I suggest that we make it clear that we're going to continue this item. And that public testimony really would be most effective if it comes back at the continued hearing rather than now, and not do this twice. Because I think Chairman Brown's right. We're going to open it up. We're going to hear everybody. We're going to hear the staff report. And then whenever this comes back to us, we're going to do it all over again. And
what if – yeah, I agree. I know that's problematic. The one thing that I'm thinking, though, is that, you know, we obviously want to hear the responses from the public at this point so we can tell staff what possibly we could do to, and you know, address those. But then maybe those who speak now can't speak second time.
I wouldn't be comfortable with that.
Yeah.
Who knows what we come back with.
I have a question for counsel, John, if you clarify me. And frankly, this happened in our last meeting where a planning commissioner suggested we continue or postpone or whatever, and it wasn't picked up, couldn't hear it very well. And then our chairman was reminded we had an open public comment, and on it went. My point being, is it possible, I mean, can we... stop things at this point in time without public comment and postpone it or continue it?
No, you're.
Or do we always have to have public comments?
If it's a item on the agenda, you have to provide a period of time in order to take public comment on that item.
And
the have public no choice then.
Correct. And the public comment would be limited to or not limited to the continuation.
It would be limited to the project in general. So, but what you can do is you can limit future public comment if it becomes repetitive or duplicative, and you can reduce potentially the amount of time. It just becomes a matter of good chair policing.
Right. And, maybe we could do a 2-minute on the second round. We've done that before on larger projects that were controversial, et cetera. Is limit the second round to a 2-minute. Let me come back.
Yeah, it sounds like we have to proceed, and then we'll have to see how to handle the second round public comment. I've had it down to a minute in the past, so that's a good point.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
All right. So I guess we're going to hear.
I like it.
I'm not sure I like it either, because we're going to hear the same thing. And
that's what we're paid these high dollars for.
Yeah.
But it's our prerogative to stop it, Chairman. But it's our prerogative. It's your prerogative to stop it if it is repetitive. So.
Well, okay. I'm more concerned about staff's presentation, and I know that when we do get this back, we're going to have to go through staff's presentation again.
Yep.
So is one more fling at it. Is there any way that we can continue this without taking staff's presentation, county council?
Yes, there's no obligation to have a staff presentation.
Okay. Commissioners, do we want to see staff's presentation now and then a second time when it comes back? Straw vote, I
guess. Obviously, something has held this up, so I'm assuming that if we hear them today, it's going to be different when we hear them at the continued date because the fact that something has come up. So
I think
it's not going to be the same presentation.
There's a noticing
problem. And so what I would suggest is that if we have to open up the public hearing, let's do that. But I'm telling anybody who's listening right now, the outcome of this hearing is going to be that at the almost for sure level, can't be 100%, but almost for sure, that we're going to continue this off calendar. And so, and that would be the most effective way for your public participation to occur. So I guess we have to open up the public hearing, but I would suggest that we, with that.
Best we can do.
Chair Brown, I'd like to advise the commission that Xander Fowler, division manager, is requesting to speak.
Yes.
Hello, Chair Brown, Xandra Fowler. For County Council, is there any way that we, it looks like we only have three people that are interested in speaking right now, possibly four. I just saw another hand go up. Can we bypass doing the staff presentation today, just allow the public comment and then continue the item?
Yeah, that's fine.
Then that would be staff's recommendation, Chair Brown and commissioners. Okay.
And I just also want to add that we do have pre-recorded messages also for this item.
Okay. Let's go ahead and do public comment.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. So we will begin with the pre-recorded messages for item number 5 and followed by live public comment. And I will now...
Hi, this is Roger DeYoung, R-O-G-E-R, capital D-E, capital Y-O-U-N-G. My address is 686 Park Hill Road, and I'm calling about conditional use permit, DCR 2018-00177, to allow for a cannabis development. My main problem with the project is the water up there. There's not enough water, and I think it's – I don't see anything in what I've read about – I think they're going to use 10 million gallons of water. They can't – there's just – it's too dry up there. I know if you go down – if during the drought, people were – other wells were drying out down the road from there. So to let them – to pump that kind of water out of the ground or even attempt to doesn't seem right. Anyway, that's my take. Thank you.
Bailey Blake, B-A-I-L-E-Y-B-L-A-K-E. I'm calling for the July 23rd planning hearing, item number five, Pagosto CUP. I would like to start by saying that I'm raising my children in Pozo. Our family has been here for over 100 years. I'm concerned that by allowing commercial projects on residential ag lands, the biological resources will not be here for future generations to thrive. Contrary to the staff report, this project is inconsistent with the character of the neighborhood and is contrary to similar ag operations. No other project in Pozo requires 24-hour lighting, 6-foot-tall security fence, a security plan, or a parking lot. I believe the well test was manipulated and done in an extremely wet time of year. My family has been hauling water to residents on River Road and Park Hill Road during drought years since the 1960s. The staff mentions a previously grown alfalfa crop. Alfalfa has never been grown here successfully. Dryland farming has been the only successful farming at that location. The applicant states in the operation plan that they hired a project growing consultant and expert in the cannabis field to estimate their water usage to be over 10 million gallons per year. They later retracted this, stating, quote, strict limitations by the water board to just over 1.4 million gallons per year, with no explanation on how they plan to reduce their water usage by over 9 million gallons. The staff report also lists little to no effect on sensitive species. This is not true. The property is located on Toro Creek, which runs directly into the Salinas River and the Santa Margarita Lake Preserve headwaters. The lake preserve and surrounding lands are home to major ecosystems. There's mountain lions, elk, nesting eagles, both bald and golden, that will all be negatively impacted by the 24-hour lighting and security fences. Additionally, the staff report relies heavily on the applicant's intent to grow organically when mitigating neighborhood concerns about runoff into Toro Creek. There's no plan in place should organic growing be unsuccessful. The property is well known for the presence of stone mortars and the multitude of Indian artifacts that have been located on site over the years. And I find it disturbing that none of this was mentioned in the staff report, even though the property is in a designated flood hazard area and a sensitive resource area. Besides being located in a high fire severity zone, the access to the project is a substandard dirt road. And I would like to point out that in Attachment 6, the APCD reported that this project exceeds the threshold for dust pollution. And that report is based on 1 to 5 vehicles because they were not provided with a traffic or trip generation study. And they're estimating 48 trips per day. So all sensitive species and residents are in jeopardy from the pollution and high fire risk of this project. Please do not approve this project.
Yes, my name is Greg Grewal, G-R-E-W-A-L. This is for public comment regarding the Planning Commission hearing, July 23rd, 2020. Item number 5, the project is not appropriate for the proposed location on River Road. The road cannot hold that many more vehicles. It's too narrow. There's water issues in this area for the planned proposal, and it does not fit in to the, we'll just call it the neighborhood. This needs to be looked at seriously and give the people that live in that area the proper respect on what's being put next to them and how many employees are going to be trying to drive down a road that's not suitable. Again, please do not approve this project. As it is, there's a lot of conditions that either need to happen, but it is not suitable for this location. Thank you very much.
Hello, my name is George Sullivan, G-E-O-R-G-E-S-U-L-L-I-V-A-N. I reside in Tassajara Canyon, southwest of Santa Margarita. I'm also calling on the hearing item number 5, the hearing date, July 23rd, year 2020. Again, item number 5. Marijuana project, cannabis, whatever you want to call it, out on River Road, I totally do not support. I am a member of the Santa Margarita Advisory Council. It was all but one on the council voted against the project. The project spokesperson came unplanned. His prompt, his video, or whatever he was going to show us did not work. He made promises that were impossible to keep, like the busing. It's just not the right location. It's a remote location that's already had problems with illegal activities with regards to the growth of cannabis. There's a water issue. There's law enforcement response times issues. Lots of issues that were brought to the attention of the developer, yet were not answered or met with by the aggrieved. I just want you to know that we've had projects in Tassajara Canyon and promises were made. They were not kept. Finally, code enforcement as well as federal agents had to shut it down because it all started out with lofty good ideas, but they were changed because they were not supervised. And I just feel the remoteness of this project. The people that live in this area are being unjustly burdened. And if I had to talk 3 minutes, I would. I probably could talk for 20 minutes on this, only because I've been around the basically the consequences of these projects, and not just the smell, not just the unlawful activities, not just the noise, the lights on at night. The list goes on. The people that they bring into the neighborhoods that have never been there before, and they go, oh, my God, look at all of these empty homes, and nobody's home. So I just want that to be heard. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Paul Sims. I'm calling about the meeting tomorrow, July 23rd, 2020, item number 5. We oppose of it. The roads are dangerous out there and will not fulfill a business like this out there. Thank you.
Janine Lehman, J-A-N-I-N-E-L-A-Y-M-A-N, item number 5, July 23rd, please, please, please don't put a pot farm next door to my home. It's just not good for our community. It's a very bad idea for my area. Thank you. Bye.
My name is Corey Brown, CoreyBrown. This is for item number 5 for tomorrow's, which is July 23rd's hearing date. I'm against the pot manufacturing facility in Pozo due to the fact for the water and the environmental impacts and the conditions of the road. Thank you. And we also, I'd also put in a letter to the county that's registered for this to it. Thank you.
My name is Stacy Phillips, Stacey Phillips. I would like to speak to agenda item number 5 on the July 23rd meeting. I reside on the corner of Pozo and River Road. I am also the chairperson of the Santa Margarita Area Advisory Council. This project came to the council by email in October 2018. At that time, on the supplement page of the application, it stated anticipated annual water usage of 1,225,000 gallons. The applicant came before the council November 6, 2019 and made their presentation. The project then came back to the council for a vote on March 4, 2020. The applicant was unavailable to attend, but the project planner, Eric Hughes, was on hand to answer questions. This time, the application had a date of February 22, 2019 and included an operations plan. Page 21 and 22 of the plan state that water estimates are based on the professional experience by the project growing consultant, Dr. Robert Flannery, a professional horticulturist and expert in the cannabis field. The usage is stated here by a professional of 10 million gallons per year, with an adjusted total after using recycled rainwater and rainwater collection of 9 million gallons. Exhibit B, conditions of approval, now states maximum annual demand of 1,314,740 gallons. I ask, what is the annual estimated usage? The scribbled-in number on the original application, the 10 million gallons their professional states within their operation plan will be, which will be needed, or the new number of 4 acre feet per year, enough for 10 to 8 households. You have the documents before you, so please verify what I'm saying. The Santa Margarita Area Advisory Council took a vote that night. The vote was unanimous to not approve the project, 12 to 0. There were many, many other discrepancies within the application which remain in the documents you have before you now. I hope you read the letter I sent, which included photos of the inadequacy of River Road to support this additional traffic. Another discrepancy, less than 2 miles from this project, we have an existing commercial operating grow yet to be permitted, not the 6 miles away as stated in the plan. I close with my final plea. My grandchildren are the sixth generation of my family growing up in Pozo. Our community is made up of good, hardworking, reasonable people who believe in being stewards of the land and supporting their neighbor. This project will harm its neighbors. The additional traffic and irresponsible water usage alone will change what we have worked generations to provide. Our properties and our way of life we share with our families are our most valued and cherished possessions. I implore you to please support our residents and not rubber stamp a project. I implore you to please support our residents and not rubber stamp a project filled with discrepancies for applicants who don't even own the subject property and whom this is only a business venture and not what others have spent lifetimes building. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Chair. That concludes the pre-recorded messages. I will now turn to members of the public who would like to speak on this item. If you are joining us via Zoom, please use the raise hand feature at the bottom of your screen. When it is your turn to speak, I will announce your name. And for those joining by telephone, please press *9 to request to speak. I will identify you by the last 3 numbers of your phone number. All callers, when it is your turn to speak, you will receive a prompt from Zoom that the host is requesting that you unmute your connection. At this time, we have 5 requests to speak. The first speaker is Abby Kopp, followed by Jeff Nelson. Ms. Kopp, your line has been unmuted, and you have 3 minutes to speak. Ms. Kopp, if you could just make sure that you unmute your connection on your end, please.
Thank you. I did. Can you hear me now?
We can hear you. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Good afternoon, Chairman Brown and the planning staff. My name is Abby Kopp, and I'm calling in regard to the SDRC 2018-00177, the marijuana grow. That is directly across the street from my house. I'm a 28-year resident. I've raised my children here. We moved here because of the beauty, the environment, and what we wanted and the way we wanted to raise our children. The biggest issue is water. We had to buy water and bring water into our ranch just to have our family garden. We now are putting our family garden in whiskey barrels and picking which kind of tomato you like so that we can even have a garden, and we own 160 acres. This is not the place. This is not the environment for a commercial marijuana grow. And I think it's very interesting that the comments before us were about how they can get product to people who want product, but they don't even, so they're going to grow all this marijuana and have no way to get it to people, which means that that's a problem in itself. And it also means that people are going to be coming out knowing that there's a problem and people are storing marijuana because there isn't a way to get it out to the community. As reported before, the sheriff's response time, on the very few occasions that we've had to have the sheriff out, it's at least 20 to 30 minutes for them to be here. If anything were to go off or it happened across the street from my house, I have 30 minutes to wait, or I have to take up arms myself or do something else. And that is frightening as hell for me. I'm a terminal cancer patient. I don't want to be looking at this and having to worry about, can hospice get in? Am I going to be safe in my home? This is not acceptable. And it's not that we believe in people being allowed to use their land for what they want, but not when it impedes their neighbors. You have to be a good neighbor. And especially out here, this is like our neighborhood, our family. We all help each other. And to do this, to approve this project would be irresponsible on the side of the water, and that the vehicles on the road, we've had two cars totaled on that road, on River Road, because of line curves and people speeding down that road.
Abby, I'm going to have to ask you, please wind this up, and I'd like to remind other people that are waiting to speak that you should, under consideration here is a motion to continue this item to a date uncertain. That means that if you do your speaking now on the actual item itself, I may have to limit or perhaps even not let you speak when the motion actually comes up before the commission again. So again, it is really, you know, to your advantage now to not take time up on the motion itself, but to speak to the continuation if you can.
Not knowing when the continuation would be, that would be hard for me to say.
It will be announced.
Well, not knowing where I'll be, whether I'm in the hospital or here, I hope that I can be, but I know that there are other people. I have family members on the road who will speak for me if I'm not here. I know that this community will speak up, and if I can't be heard the next time, that leaves a space for someone else to be heard. I thank you very much for listening to me, and please do what's right for the people of Pozo. This is our home. This is our community. And it's everything we've worked for. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank
you. The next speaker is Jeff Nelson, followed by a caller ending with the last three numbers of 175. Mr. Nelson, your line has been unmuted, and you have 3 minutes.
Hi, this is Jeff Nelson. I'm a 30-year owner of property in the area and a land use attorney. I'm just going to speak to the continuance and noticing issue. I request that the staff communicate with me on how they're going to renotice it, because I'm the one who raised this issue. And as to fair hearing, depending on where it is, I request that you preserve the recorded comments that were made today, and they didn't take much time to play, and I think that either they should be played again, because some of them were very complicated and deal with specific facts. So anyway, I'm looking for a fair hearing the next time around, and that people have an opportunity to get their input in a fashion that is fresh for you decision makers. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next speaker is Jessica Brown, followed by Catherine Burkhan. Ms. Brown, your line has been unmuted, and you have 3 minutes.
Thank you. I'm just going to speak then to the continuation for this, based on what happened today, and I will reserve my comments for the next meeting. I do want to make a comment regarding this continuation, that this seems to be a problem with this whole project, as Stacey Phillips mentioned, that we have not gotten, the application has changed so many
times. Ms. Brown, if I can have you just get closer to the speaker, you're sounding very distant.
I'm sorry. Is that better? I hope this is better. I just want to say that I think that this has been a problem ongoing with this application, that the information has continued to change. There's been continuations. It's been very confusing for the public, for those of us, to find out what the actual information is. And I would like to see that we are noticed correctly and that we get all of the information moving forward. And I will end my comments there and make more comments at the next continuation. Thank you.
Thank you. The last request to speak is Catherine Burkhan. Ms. Burkhan, your line has been unmuted, and you have 3 minutes.
I am a neighbor of this project on Park Hill River Road area that is known for historically having bad water supply. Many residents have had a history of needing to haul water during drought years. This agricultural residential area cannot withstand the water requirements of these commercial projects. We request an EIR be prepared for all water issues related to the sites, including but not limited to the groundwater supply, groundwater recharge, neighborhood impact, and sustainability. The property has two waterways on it that lead to Santa Margarita Lake, the drinking water for San Luis Obispo. The response time for fire and EMS are inordinately long. The locations offer a 30 to 45 minute drive for public safety officers as well. We request an EIR to be prepared on any and all issues related to public safety, including fire danger, law enforcement response, times to crimes in progress at the site, number of personnel available to respond on different shifts, preparation of law enforcement policies and procedures, operational orders for response to both the area and I just want to say this project's on a narrow two-lane road with winding, and often times it's not maintained well. The project is located on a historical wagon trail, dirt road. Traffic from the project will create significant dust. We request a detailed study of the traffic plan for access to the site, traffic patterns, and safety issues that may occur due to increased traffic. Also, a study of transportation of chemicals used to process and high-value product being transported off-site. The commercial industrial characteristic of the project are in direct conflict with the surrounding neighborhood of Park Hill Road and River Road. This area is historically a residential agriculture area that has been farming, ranching, and is completely incompatible with commercial marijuana production. I just want to say I really think we need a full EIR on the terpene drift, impact on farming, sensitive receptors, and other items of concern. Thank you.
Thank you. And
that concludes the request to speak for this item, but I would like to invite members of the public wishing to speak to do so by using the raise hand feature at the bottom of your screen or by pressing *9, and I'll just give it a few seconds, Chair, in the event we have new requests. And I am seeing none, Chair.
Okay, thank you. Bring it back to commission, and I think we're looking for a motion.
I'd move that we continue this off calendar.
Second?
I'll second that.
Okay. Would you please call the roll?
Commissioner Moultari?
Yes.
Commissioner Campbell?
Yes.
Commissioner Don Ortiz-Legg?
Yes.
And Chair Brown?
Yes. Motion passes. Okay, I think we're at the end of the meeting. I'll entertain a motion to take all testimony and correspondence into the record.
So moved. Okay. Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. And a motion to adjourn to the next regularly scheduled meeting.
So moved.
So moved. Okay.
All those in favor say aye.
Okay. Thank
you.
Aye.
Aye.
See you in a few weeks.
Yeah.
Thank you,
and,
Chair.
Okay. I wish we could have been a little bit more productive today, but unfortunately not.
No. Got a couple of things. Got some affordable housing done.
We did. You look at that on the bright side.
Right.
Thank you so much.
The meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care, everyone.
Thanks.
Bye.